Blog Talk Radio.
Health is a static process. You have health until you get sick, and then you take this for that. Wellness is a dynamic process. It's not a quick fix. It's a conscious decision that you actually make daily to give your body what it needs to be well. When you supply your cells with the right nutrients, your cells can basically help keep you well. So which camp are you in? Static or dynamic? Health or wellness? Hello, this is Dr. Budweiser, and I am coming to you directly from the Wiser Living headquarters, and I would like to welcome each and every one of you who have taken the time out to tune into this broadcast today. Your time is valuable, and I am truly grateful for your participation. So over the next 29 minutes, exactly 28 minutes and 59 seconds now, I want to add to your wellness experience. First of all, please go to wiserliving.com. That's W-E-I-S-E-R, living.com. And on that initial page, you will see on the right-hand side, the right upper side of the page, where you can get a Skype consultation. There will also be a pop-up or a drop-down where you can add your name and email address. You can click on the Wiser Living TV link and watch all the YouTube videos we've uploaded. By subscribing, you'll not only get access to these educational videos, but you'll be informed when a new video is uploaded. You can also get access to our archived radio programs at Wiser Living Radio, and you can check out the menu bar that lists all of the articles, programs, services, and Wiser Living seminars, recipes, and products. So do take a look at that at your earliest convenience. So once again, real quickly, check out and sign up at the drop-down where it says put your name and email address in there. We need that. It's free. Go to wiserliving.com to do that. Subscribe at Wiser Living TV. Follow us at Wiser Living Radio. Like us on Facebook.com/ WEISER Living, Wiser Living. And you can also connect with us on Google+, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, and even Instagram. Wow. Does fat make you fat? Does fat make you sick? Why do we need fat anyway? So let's take a short ride back in time in the year, back into the years like, what's that, Back to the Future? Let's go back in time to the year 1958. Some of you were born at that time. Some of you were just born at that time in that decade. Some of you had been here quite a while, like the person I'm going to talk about. Let me see. 2016. -1958. Okay. That's 58 years ago. 58 years ago, an American scientist whose name was Ansel Keys started a study called the Seven Countries Study. This study took an in-depth look at the association between artery disease, heart disease, and diet. Artery disease, heart disease, and diet. Now, this study revealed that in the countries where the population consumed a lot of fat, there was also a high amount of heart disease. This obviously led to supporting the idea that fat in the diet or dietary fat was a primary cause of heart disease. Based on this study, we were led to believe for decades, and even so today, that high fat equals heart problems and clogged arteries and overweight bodies. But there was a slight oversight. For some unknown reason, portions of this study was left out. Now, when you leave out part of a finding, it will skew the results. Now, in this study, remember that this was 58 years ago. They left out two important facts. Number one, in countries like Norway and Holland, where people ate a lot of fat, they had little heart disease. Yes, little heart disease, not more. And number two, they left out of that study that in countries such as Chile, where fat consumption was low, the rate of heart disease was high. So low fat connected with heart problems. High fat connected with no heart problems. So what happened here? Well, They only used data from the countries that supported their theory. They call this theory now cherry picking. In basketball, they call we use this word cherry picking as well. When you get something easy to support, you know, you're not really doing an in-depth study or of the game as well. This was a flawed observational study that picked up steam and gained massive media attention, and ultimately had a major influence on the dietary guidelines of the next few decades. So let's go back to the 70s, or if we're in 1958, let's go forward to the 70s. In the 70s, there was a lot of concern over the fact that coronary artery disease and heart disease was on the rise here in America. This concern reached the federal government level in the United States. In 1977, an American committee of the United States Senate published this, the first dietary goals for the United States, and because there was a sincere need to reverse this epidemic of heart disease, this is what happened. And what I find interesting is that these guidelines, they received a lot of criticism from respected scientists who insisted that sugar was the culprit. This is back in 77. It was the increased consumption of refined sugar, not fat, but sugar, that was the reason. The American Medical Association, they also insisted that the culprit was increased consumption of sugar. So the dietary guidelines in 1977 stated that we should consume less fat and less cholesterol. We should consume less refined and processed sugars, which they were getting that right. And we should eat more complex carbohydrates from vegetables, fruits, and grains. Grain problem was an issue because grains, breads, break down into sugar. These guidelines were then picked up by the United States Department of Agriculture, or the USDA. USDA, you want to kind of like, you might want to write that down or keep it in your head. Agriculture, United States Department of Agriculture, which was very convenient for them because their job is to sell what? Grain. So this started the low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet craze. This basically recommended that all Americans reduce their fat, saturated fat, and cholesterol consumption, and also increase their carbohydrate consumption to 55 to 60% of their daily calories. So, if you don't even know, if you don't even like math, 55 is more than half, 60 is more than half, there's going to be a problem eventually. When the guidelines were released, the cattle, and the dairy industries, they went ballistic because Congress was telling people that animal fat was bad for their health. So they put some serious pressure on the government committees to revise the 1977 report. But it was a little bit too late because the damage had already been done, and American meat, egg, and milk consumption continued to drop. It continued to fall because the United States Congress was telling people that animal products were bad for their health. In the 1980s, the USDA, that's the United States Department of Agriculture, they partnered with the Health and Human Services Department to issue the first edition of the Dietary Guidelines for Americans, which eventually became the USDA Food Pyramid. Now, so it said all this, gave you this background to lead to this food pyramid, which everybody knows about. During the 1980s, several other guidelines and reports were issued by the Surgeon General's report on nutrition and health and the National Research Council's diet and health report. Both of these reports were heavily influenced by the low-fat proponents. These reports weighed heavily in the revision of the USDA food pyramid guidelines in the 1990s. So we've gone from 58 to 90. So that basically, you have several generations that are, it's ingrained in their brain to be low fat. And it's interesting to note that the actual graphic for the USDA food pyramid came from Sweden. That's a country which had a higher heart disease rate than the United States. The bottom line here, or if you look at the base of that pyramid, the base is the bottom, the standard, which everything is built upon. It listed 6 to 11 servings of bread, cereal, rice, and pasta. The next level up, that's the next block on top of that base, was the fruits and vegetable group, 3 to 5 servings of veggies and 2 to 4 servings of fruit. The next level on top of that was the 2 to 3 servings of milk, yogurt, and cheese, and 2 to 3 servings of meat, poultry, fish, dry beans, eggs, and nuts. And the top of the pyramid, that recommendation was to use very little fat, oils, and sweets. I can see the sweets, but the fat and oils, I don't know. But we're going to find out. Even though multiple studies from many different sources have totally confirmed the benefits of a low-carbohydrate, whole food diet, this USDA food pyramid still does not reflect current scientific research and current results. The United States Department of Agriculture, they revised the food pyramid back in 2010. That's like 6 years ago. First, advising the USDA were all proponents of, guess what? You're right, low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet. They didn't even review the wealth of gold standard research supporting a lower carbohydrate diet and reduced grain consumption. So the pyramid continues to recommend the products that benefit the agricultural and food processor interests, not human interests. The latest development in the USDA food pyramid history has seen the pyramid actually dismantled in favor of a new and easier to understand USDA food plate. And although the graphic has changed, we're looking at a plate now, the same bad dietary advice is still being offered. Fat does not make you fat, and it doesn't cause heart disease as originally thought. I'm going to keep pounding that in because I actually have people that I see on a daily basis that still have that in their brain, that fat makes you fat, because they've had a heart attack or they've had angina, and they've been told this, and they've been on earth more than 50 years. Fats do not make you fat. Sugar does. Refined processed food does. When people eat less fat, they have a tendency to consume more starch, and they have a tendency to consume more sugar. And this combination will increase your levels of dangerous cholesterol. Studies have shown that 75% of the people who end up going to the ER, that's the emergency room, due to a heart attack, have normal cholesterol levels. So cholesterol is not the problem, because if you have a heart attack, angina, and clogged arteries, you get in there and need a quadruple bypass surgery, and they take your blood and they see that your cholesterol is like normal, well, they just discount and keep and do the surgery. Sugar's the problem, because those same ER heart attack people are pre-diabetic, or they have type 2 diabetes. So if you are consuming a diet with good quality fats and good quality protein, it can prevent and even reverse diabetes and pre-diabetes, while eating sugar and refined carbohydrates leads to pre-diabetes, diabetes, pre-diabetes, coronary artery problems, and so forth and so on. So that's the way to go. It's high fat, low carbs. High fat, low carbs. That's a better way to go. Now, don't cut out the fact that fat, good fat, is good. Not all fats are good. But if you eat good fats, you're going to have a good body. Let me say this again. Fat does not make you fat. Sugar makes you fat. And there's no correlation between saturated fat and heart disease. You know, saturated means solid. There's no correlation whatsoever between saturated fat and heart disease. As a matter of fact, a recent editorial in the British Journal of Medicine drives this same point into the ground, so to speak. Researchers found that while it is true that lowering saturated fat in the diet may lower total cholesterol, it's actually the good kind of cholesterol. That's LDL. Yes, LDL is not as bad as it's been made out to be. It's the light, fluffy cholesterol. So if it's light and fluffy, it moves. It's not going to be stuck somewhere. So let me say it again. Fat does not make you fat. It doesn't make you sick. Fat is one of the body's most basic building blocks. the cell wall needs fat. The average person is made up of 15 to 30% fat. And I know. You get on the internet, and all you can see is if you want a nice, slim, sleek body, you better get your body fat down to 10%, 9%, 6% when, you know, your body needs fat. For you who can ask, for you people who can ask a bodybuilder, ask them. They get down to 6% for the show, and they flex their muscles. It's looking good. They're cut. I mean, even some of the actors, I mean, they're on the movie, and they look all cut up and just, oh, my goodness, I wish I could get like that. I wish I could lose the belly fat and everything. But after that movie that they're getting paid millions of dollars to be in, after that program or, you know, the bodybuilding contest, when that's over, guess what they do? Guess what the bodybuilders do? The first thing they do is go out and get eat as much fatty foods as they can, because they cannot live on 4%, 5%, 6% body fat. It's not healthy. Eating the right kinds of fat and lots of it will actually cause you to lose weight and get back to the size that your skeleton can actually support. So it's about your skeleton, how thick your bones are, exactly what your weight, exactly what your size should be. If you just eat the right foods, it'll take care of the rest, as you'll see in a minute or two from now. Eating lots of fats will cause your body not to store fats in fat cells, because if you eat the wrong kind of fats or you eat low fat, your body is thinking that you're starving it. So when you look in the mirror, you see yourself as being maybe overweight, a little tad of fat here or there. You want love handles gone, but your body on the inside sees you as being anorexic. So it's saying, this person is trying to kill us. So what does it do? When you do eat, even if you eat a sugar, it'll change it to a triglyceride and store it as fat. So some fats are unhealthy. The fats from your favorite fast food hamburger or cheeseburger place, and the fats from meat bought in grocery stores that is not grass-fed and grass-finished, they will not have the good fat in it. It's going to taste good. Don't get me wrong. It's definitely going to taste good. Fat tastes good, and it also makes it cut your craving. It cuts your appetite. But those fats are unhealthy. You know, these trans fats and vegetable oils, they're not heavy because they are pro-inflammatory. They cause inflammation in your body, low grade where you don't know it, but it's wreaking havoc inside your body. Inflammation. Bad fats, inflammation. Good fats protects you. So let me say that again. The average American, before I say that, the average, this is what I find really mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing to me when I'm researching and reading all this information before I bring it to you. The average American eats 152 pounds of sugar and 146 pounds of flour. This flour converts to sugar after you've made something with the flour. In your pie pan, the crust, you go get the bread, you know, like warm bread smells good. When you buy it out of the store, you got to ask the question, how does this bread stay soft on this shelf for weeks? And then you get home and it's another week before you consume it all. How does it stay like that and doesn't spoil? There must be something that stabilizes it or stabilizes the live engine, if there's anything live in it. So this flour, once again, converts to sugar. That's equivalent to a pound, basically this 146 to 152 pounds of sugar and 146 pounds of flour. That's equivalent to a pound of sugar and flour combined every day. And obviously some of you are not doing this, so that means there's an overabundance in a lot of different people because, you know, not everybody's doing this. If you're eating like this, think processed foods on the shelf in a supermarket or fast food. If you're eating like this, then all of this sugar is going to cause your cells to become numb to insulin, which is coming from your pancreas. It's going to cause your pancreas to overload and break down. So when the call for insulin comes out one day, it's not going to happen. Your body pumps out more and more of this insulin to bring your blood sugar back, blood sugar levels back into within the normal range. And what happens? But you simply, or at least Your body cannot burn the sugar you eat. There's sugar in the blood. There's sugar in the bread. There's sugar in the food you eat. There's sugar in the soda you drink. There's sugar in your coffee. There's sugar in your donuts. Your chewing gum has sugar, which leads your body to change this excess sugar to a triglyceride, and it stores it as fat. It stores it in a fat cell, creating insulin resistance, which in turn leads to problems with your metabolism. And so you think it's your thyroid, and then you go take something for your thyroid, but that's not the problem. Remember, when you eat less fat, you tend to eat more starch and more sugar. Healthy cell walls made from high-quality fats are better to metabolize insulin. So if you want your pancreas not to work too hard and you want a lot of energy, eat high-quality fats. Insulin from your pancreas keeps your blood sugar within the normal range, right? If your blood sugar is out of range, the body will store fat. I want you to really get this. If your blood sugar is out of range, the body will store fat. And the right fats will increase fat burning. That's right. Fat will increase fat burning. The right fat will increase fat burning. It cuts your hunger. It reduces fat storage, which means you're going to lose inches. If you can give your body the right fat, it won't have a need to store fat. Because we're saying fat, 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 fat. Right fat won't store fat. The body on the inside is saying, oh, my goodness, he or she is giving me the good fat. So it will not store. It won't have a need to store, so it will burn the fat. And guess what you get when your body burns fat? Burning fat gives you energy, sustained energy. We're talking about energy throughout the day where you're not falling asleep between the hours of 12 noon to 2 p.m. Fat makes you lean. Fats even heal. H-E-A-L will heal. 99% of Americans are deficient in good, necessary fats. They're deficient in fat from wild-caught fish, fat from organic pasture, P-A-S-T-U-R-E, pasture-raised chicken eggs. You need omega-3 fats. Most of you know that. You know, your brain is about 60% fat. Did you know that? Of that percentage, the biggest portion comes from omega-3 fats called DHA. Your brain needs DHA as a spark plug. A spark plug. It's the match that spark that makes everything go. Makes what go? Your brain needs that DHA. You got the spark plug so the cells can communicate. But it's not using fat to communicate. The fat is a spark to cause the communication. The cells also need good sugar, like glucose and mannose and xylose, et cetera. You know, that's the language for communication. But you need the spark in order to get the language. So the brain and the body can know what it needs, you know, what its needs, desires, and wants are. So if you are experiencing dry, itchy, scaling, or flaky skin, if you are experiencing soft, cracked, or brittle nails, if you're experiencing, you know, hard earwax, had a patient that had a consultation with that had earwax that they had to go to the doctor to get them to pull the earwax out because it was impacted, it was hard. If you're experiencing these tiny bumps on the back of your arm and you're on your torso, if you're experiencing achy, stiff joints, if you are experiencing any of these, then your body is sending you a very important signal. It's signaling that you are not giving it enough good fats. That's right. The right fats can improve your mood, can improve your skin, can improve your hair. It can improve your nails. And I know you go on the internet and you saw my nails are brittle, and it tells you, you know, basically give you all of the information about it, but it doesn't tell you exactly what to do. And then you'll say, oh, I can take this for that. I can you know, strengthen my hair and thicken my hair if I take this one, you know, nutritional supplement. No, that's not right. You got to have all of them. So you can't eat a fast food, you know, lunch or breakfast, lunch or dinner, and then expect your body to respond properly because you don't have the right nutrients in your system. and fat is like very, very important. The right fats can protect you from type 2 diabetes, can protect you from dementia, can protect you from cancer and chronic ailments. Chronic ailments and heart disease. Now, let me give you a list of oils to avoid completely. So get a pen and paper out, or you can listen to this broadcast again, or you can dial up someone and tell them to listen to this broadcast, because this is important. So I'm going to give you a week, because I know you got it in your refrigerator. I know you have it in your home pantry somewhere. So I'm giving you this list, and I'll give you one good fat to consume, so at least to tide you over to next week, because there's a lot more information we have to cover. The first thing you want to avoid completely, trash it. Well, don't trash it. If you use it, you got a week to use it, and then that's it. Canola oil. Canola oil, I'm going to cover that, the whys, why you should do it next. Canola oil, avoid it. Corn oil, for no other reason. Avoid it just for no other reason. 95% of the corn that's grown here is GMO. It's genetically modified and has a lot of pesticides like glyphosate in it. Soybean oil, you got to toss it. Stop using it. Look at your favorite salad dressing in your refrigerator, and look at the ingredients. If you don't have that salad dressing, go to the store and check it out. You'll be amazed at the oils that you should not be consuming that's in that product. Vegetable oil. Are any vegetables actually in the oil in the first place? I mean, think about it. We don't even think about that. And if you can see the oil, the light can see the oil, which means it's breaking down. It's oxidizing right there in the bottle. Peanut oil. I know I'm going to rub some people the wrong way with that, because that peanut oil on certain foods tastes really, really good. Sunflower oil, safflower oil, can use. Cottonseed oil. Cottonseed oil. Think about that. Cotton you make clothes with. Here they are processing it to make oil to cook with, or they're putting it in food that you're eating, even your favorite candy. Grapeseed oil. A hybrid of that is canola oil, margarine, and you probably want to cut this off now. I don't want to listen to him anymore. He's going to take my margarine away. Yes, I'm going to take your margarine away. I'm going to make a suggestion, and even your shortening. You know that Crisco? I did a show on that last year. Fake butter substitute. You can't use it. So when you look in your refrigerator and it says, I can't believe it's butter, believe it. It's not. Not buying these oils is simple because it's a choice that you can make. It's a simple choice that you can make, and it's easy to see them on the shelf. But you must be aware that most processed foods, and I do mean most, actually contain these oils in their ingredient listing. Salad dressings I've mentioned already, condiments, crackers, chips, donuts, cake mixes, cakes, pies, and the list goes on. Remember, if you can see the oil in its container, I just mentioned this, the light can see that oil as well. That's in the store. So it's oxidizing and becoming rancid as it sits on the shelf. And then you buy it, you take it home, and you open it, and it oxidizes even further and becomes rancid. So let me stop right here. There's so much information to cover. You know, next week we're going to finish up with why should you never eat vegetable oil or margarine? Why is canola oil so bad for you? Do you use vegetables to make vegetable oil? How does that affect you? Is it good or bad? What fat should you use? The essential nutrients that are found in fats, we're going to talk about that. So go through your pantry and refrigerator and look at the ingredient listing to see if these no good oils are in your zone, in your house, okay? And we'll talk more about that. And also during the week, I'm gonna be placing Dr. Budweiser's health tip of the day. So you want to go to Facebook.com/ Dr. Budweiser. That's DrBudweiser for those little tips. And also go to WiserLiving.com and check that page out. Okay. So with that, I've ran out of time. See you next week. And remember, let your food be your medicine, and let your medicine be your food. This is Dr. Budweiser, and we will see you next time.